got a lot.
Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Dr. Tish Oney. She's an international performing artist, author, composer, conductor. She tours as a symphony, pops, big band soloist, jazz vocalist, voice pedagogue, musicologist. Her new album is The Best Part, and we're going to be talking about her and Bach and jazz. Tish, it's a pleasure to be talking to you again.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, you have like a lot of projects that you've been working on, and I want to sort of see if we can get through them one at a time. First of all, there's a concert, a Bach and jazz with Tish Oney.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about this.
Well, this was commissioned 2 years ago, actually, and almost exactly 2 years ago, coming up on two, with the SC Bach Society. And they are a high-level performance organization that is committed to the performance of the works of J.S. Bach and the other members of his family, so his sons that also composed.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had in mind to have me as a featured artist who would arrange and perform a group of, really, they gave me license to do whatever I wanted to, because I've been a Baroque soprano also for my entire career since my master's level grad school. So that's a few decades ago. And so I've loved the music of J.S. Bach, and I've done a lot of Bach recitals. So they got wind of this, and they also know of me as a jazz musician. So they thought it would be interesting if they hired me to put on this concert of music that combined Bach with contemporary jazz. So I decided the way I was going
to
do it.
Okay, I need to hear this.
COVID time. Originally, we were going to use the singers that he has in his choir, because the SC Bach organization has a choir. They also bring in instrumentalists to play period instruments with them, but they have a group of really great singers. Well, because of COVID, we decided not to use the choir, but I offered to sing as a soloist some soprano arias from my all Bach recital, which I put together several years ago, called Journey Through Holy Week with Johann Sebastian Bach. So it's a 14 aria presentation that I culled from the St. Matthew Passion, the St. John's Passion, and several cantatas, and the Magnificat. So it tells the story of Holy Week, although it goes back a little bit further, and it grabs from the Magnificat when Mary finds she is expecting a child, and then all the way through to the resurrection. So I offered to do part of this recital and to complement it with a second half of music that was by me.
Which was going to be
jazz music. That was going to be the jazz, yes. So that's what we did. So I hired an ensemble that could play both. I hired a wonderful bassist who plays with the Greenville Symphony Orchestra and who also is a working jazz musician, a jazz bassist. So he plays, I don't want to spoil a surprise, but he and I play the Bach Invention number 8 together. He plays the left-hand part, and I scat the right-hand part.
What?
And it's really fun. It's
so much fun.
It's really exciting. So that, for instance, that was us combining jazz with Bach's music. And the rest of it is really more straightforward as far as we're performing in the manner originally conceived by J.S. Bach, the arias, and then we're also performing a whole set of original jazz by yours truly.
This blows my mind.
So much fun.
So wait a minute. Before we get into,
I never find a substitute if I ever got sick because I don't know anybody else who really can do this.
I would think so. So first of all, how are people going to be able to see this?
Yes, it's going to be available. I don't have a date. I wish I had a date,
okay.
A release date, but it's coming. It's forthcoming. It's in the editorial process.
Okay.
And it's been edited. It's been recorded. We're done with it, but we've got a little bit more interviewing to do, talking about the music and how we put it together. So the presentation will be available on the scbach.org website in the next couple of months.
Holy smokes. How long a piece is it?
I would say it's about a 75-minute show.
Wow. Now, yeah. Okay, I want to ask you some questions. I'm familiar with Bach's music,
mm-hmm.
But to me it's always seemed very, very controlled, mathematical
mm-hmm.
almost,
yeah.
As a matter of fact. There was the book Gödel, Escher, and Bach, written many decades ago about the relationships of mathematics and music and art. So how does that dovetail with what seems like more spontaneous jazz? I mean, how do you make that connection and work it?
Well, I find a lot of similarities between jazz and Baroque music, and a lot of jazz musicians are inspired by Baroque music and love to play it and even warm up, you know, at the piano keyboard with Bach inventions and fugues and things. And a lot of fugal motives are used in jazz, too, mm-hmm. by those of us that have studied both styles. And so I find that the similarities are what I really wanted to bring out.
Fantastic.
In this juxtaposition of two styles. So, for instance, the voice is the same kind of voice that lends itself to good jazz singing is the kind of voice that should be singing Baroque music, in my mind. It's a little bit more of a streamlined voice. It's still powered by the breath, and it can float above the instruments, but it's not going to be really heavily bogged down with vibrato because it's got to move through melismatic passages and so forth, kind of like scat singing.
Yep.
You know? And so part of the objective was to draw some parallels.
Is he the only composer you could successfully do this with?
No. There are several.
Do you have any?
Telemann and Scarlatti.
Okay.
And, yeah, other Baroque composers sure.
Could this be the start of a series?
That idea has just come from Mark Lynch, so I don't know.
Because that seems, if this swings and this works.
If this swings. I will, yes. You will be to blame for it, or to be credited, one or the other.
Or simultaneously both.
It could be.
Wow. So people should look at that. Give out the address where they should go. They should be looking for it.
Sure. It's scbach.org.
And if you go to that site, strongly recommend that you do an entire series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, there's that project. Now, you're working on a book that's about to come out called Jazz Voice, A Guide to Singing Pedagogy.
Yes.
That's a title that's not going to garner a popular audience.
Probably not.
As soon as you put the word pedagogy in there, you're after serious singers. And I don't think it's a bad thing, but I mean, what you're doing is you're after people who actually know the craft from a somewhat technical point of view.
Yes, that's right. Singing teachers and jazz singers and students that are pursuing this genre.
Do you think this is going to be an academic book that will be used in classes?
Yes, definitely.
So talk to me about the layout of this book. I want to know how you...
Okay.
I know nothing about, you know, I'm coming from ignorance and I apologize for that.
Okay.
But how do you technically teach singing like this?
Well, I come from, and I don't know if we've talked about this or not, but I come from a science background.
I know that.
First.
Yeah.
Yes. And so my first chapter is the science of singing. And it's there in part because well, it has to be in a voice pedagogy book of any kind. But because when I was teaching jazz voice at University of Southern California, I was teaching a master's level class, which was just a kind of a vocal jazz master class where students would come in and share what do you think your education has lacked? What do we need to fill in? Huh. What gaps do you have?
Yes, yes.
None of them knew anything about the vocal instrument from a science point of view. So I thought, huh, this is something that really needs to be in the book. And then we go from there and we talk about resonance and articulation, breathing, alignment and posture, vocal health and hygiene, microphone technique, stage demeanor, stagecraft, artistry.
So this is really geared to the performer.
Improvisation, yes, it's geared toward everybody. It's geared toward three audiences. The voice teacher, predominantly, well, either the jazz voice teacher or the classical voice teacher who wants to learn how to teach their jazz students that come to them for help. And also those students in a voice pedagogy class, for instance, and also working jazz singers who feel that they need to brush up on some of these areas that maybe they're not as good at or as knowledgeable about.
The reason I asked you about this is because I think the general audience has no idea about singing.
I think
the general public just thinks you're just naturally born to it.
You open your mouth and it happens.
Right. You go on America's Greatest Whatever. And then
yes.
And then you sing, you win an award and you make some records. And they don't, there's no understanding that, like all other instruments, your voice is an instrument, and that you can approach this in a very teaching academic way.
Right. And the nice thing is that working singers know that there's a balance between creativity and just doing what comes naturally and knowing technically how to help yourself when you're having a day when you really can't sing well. You've got to have technique to fall back on.
Huh.
And know the recipe for success for your voice for this piece when you don't feel the spirit moving, you know? Because sometimes you have to perform and you have a slight cold, or you're having some emotional difficulty and you've just got to power through. So there's a chapter on mental toughness. You know, there's a chapter
on performance
preparation. Yeah.
And you're talking about health, too. You're talking about...
Absolutely.
Yeah, it has
because
to be...
your body.
It has to... But it also must have to do with foods that you eat. It has to also... It must have to do with the weather also.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The voice is different on every single day of a singer's life. There are different factors affecting it. There are different pressures affecting it. There are different hormonal imbalances affecting it. Pollen affects it. Environmental considerations, emotional considerations.
So the idea is taking all that and understanding that and then being able to still perform, which sounds daunting. It sounds really daunting. What was your worst experience in performance where...
Go there. In terms of which?
In terms of the fact that you were working through a lot of things, either physically or mentally, and you really didn't feel like doing it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to mention the specific...
Don't. No, I didn't expect that.
Ensemble I was working with, but there was one in particular that comes to mind when... It was high pollen season, and I am a person with spring allergies that learned a long time ago, don't do outdoor concerts in May or June, you know,
I have spring allergies, so I know what you're going through.
Yes. So there was this outdoor concert in May. It was really hard. It was hard to get through it because there were beautiful blossoming trees all around the stage. And I was wearing a mask, a paper mask over my mouth and nose for as long as I could backstage so that those deep inhalations in front of the audience would hopefully be tolerable enough to get through the performance without, you know, sneezing, coughing, or otherwise having, you know, allergic symptoms.
Oh, my God.
It was really a struggle.
Oh, my God. I can imagine. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed you still managed it.
Well, I'm amazed, too, because it was a really tough day.
Okay.
It was
I totally get that. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, and it is always a pleasure to talk with her, is Dr. Tish Oney, international performing artist, author and composer, conductor. She tours as a symphony, pops, big band soloist, jazz vocalist, vocal voice pedagogue, and musicologist. Other than that, she has a lot of spare time. Her new album is The Best Part, which is a wonderful album. And we've been talking about a lot of her projects, including this Bach and Jazz with Tish Oney. Now, you have a newly sort of put together website, which is really wonderful, and I recommend people go to it. Can you give out the website address?
Thank you. Sure. It's tishoney.com, T-I-S-H-O-N-E-Y.
There's some amazing things in there. There's a really nice blog that I found really fascinating to read from you. And you had, I think it was two entries about balancing writing and performance. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about that. Do you have routines that you go through for specific times of the day? And how do you set out your day? You have so many projects that you're involved in.
Yeah, you know, it's about priorities and prioritization, because right now, for instance, I'm writing an article for Classical Singer magazine. It's a cover story, and I need to get it finished and submitted, so it's got to jump up to the top of my list of priorities under, believe it or not, writing my book, even though my book still is requiring me to write about 1,000 words a day to stay on target. I know, to stay on target to hand it in time.
Well, one thing
I'm going to do it, Mark. It's going to happen.
One thing I do know, Tish, is that books are much looser with their deadlines than periodicals.
Well, that could be, yeah.
Journals and periodicals, they have a hard, fast deadline. That's it.
Yep.
And I know people who have been dallying with books for years, although I know you won't do that.
Well, I can't do that because my editor and my publisher, Roman and Littlefield, have already fixed this date in stone, and they've given me a little extra time because of the success of the Peggy Lee book and my having to do a lot of interviews and writing assignments in conjunction with that book. They've graciously extended my deadline, so I'm not going to make them extend it again. So
that's because you're you.
Well, I'm trying. I'm trying not to make.
Do you work well with deadlines?
I guess I do. Yes, I guess I always have. I've been always the kind of singer who would book the show first and write it afterwards. So if I'm not gonna spend a lot of time putting something specific to a venue together until I know it's going to happen. So a lot of the time I get commissioned to write a particular kind of a show, like for Nat King Cole's centennial. I wrote a Nat King Cole show, and I actually played the piano and sang with a guitarist and a bass player, and we were like the Nat King Cole trio, at least in instrumentation, and I did my best, playing and singing. But those kinds of opportunities come, and when they do, I'll book them out as far as I feel I need to get the writing done, the writing of the arrangements, then the writing of the things that tie the songs together in between. And then I'll write it and perform it and practice it until it's ready. And that deadline is really a good motivator for me.
You also bring up in one of this entries about Chronos and Kairos.
Yes.
You know, that's so interesting because I was familiar with those before. Talk to me, and for the benefit of the audience who don't know about that, talk to me about those.
Sure. Well, Chronos they're both measuring time. They're both terms, Greek terms for time. But in the Greek, they understand that Chronos is the kind of time that we refer to when we have a deadline, when we have a to-do list, a calendar, a beeper that goes off, a watch. But Kairos is the kind of time that is more timeless time. Like when you're in the zone and time passes,
yeah.
or you're at the beach with your family, you spend an afternoon and you're not conscious of what hour it is or the time on your watch, but you're just enjoying the moment in the moment. So what I've learned is that if I can give myself a little bit of Kairos time every day, pull out of the Kronos rat race long enough to be creative, I can be creative at a much more productive level.
I think that's really important. I think a lot of people have to realize that you have to work that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although,
I'll tell you, Tish, I cannot picture you like lying on a lounge chair at a beach. I just don't see that. Because in your head, I can't believe.
I can't either.
See? I knew it. It's just like, you know, a week away in Fiji. No. I don't.
Right. Oh, my gosh. I'd love it. I'd love it. I know I would. The problem is
no, you wouldn't, because you'd get there and your head would be going overtime and you'd feel guilty that you were doing that.
Yeah. Would I finally maybe finish my song cycle that I've been putting off? It's half written.
Oh, my God. Okay. I just want to mention a couple of other things that you're involved with. You do an Anatomy of a Standard column in All About Jazz.
Yep.
And for me, that was fascinating to read.
Thank you.
A good academic, real analysis of a standard. I read the one about Alice in Wonderland. Talk to me about that.
Sure.
That was from a Disney film?
Yes, it's from a Disney film musical in the 1950s.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and so the song, Alice in Wonderland, the jazz standard, came from that presentation. And it's a song that I recorded with John Chiodini for my third album, Sweet Youth.
Yep.
And I got permission to add lyrics to the beginning and the end from Disney music, and I did. So I talk a little bit about that in the article. But the article comes from that column, Anatomy of a Standard. And I actually went to Dublin to talk about this in the Documenting Jazz Conference, the inaugural Documenting Jazz Conference in 2019. And I presented some information and a lecture recital surrounding these, you would have loved it, surrounding these songs that I had analyzed for this column.
Oh.
Yeah. And teaching the other musicologists about how important it is to not ignore the lyrics and the lyrical construction when considering presenting jazz theory to their classes. So one of the objectives of that column is to remind jazz theorists that there is very often another piece of the song that the songwriters had intended for people to know, and those are the lyrics. And a lot of the time, when you look at the lyrics next to a full analysis of the music, you get so much more out of the whole song when you understand the marriage between the two. And so, for instance, in Alice in Wonderland, there are moments where you can see the melody going up and down and up and down. It's hilly, just like the description of the lyrics. And so in that case, that the music reflects the lyrics, and the lyrics work together with the music to tell a more complete story. So when the instrumentalist and the vocalists singing this song are aware of those parallels, they can actually bring more into it, and the audience can get a little bit more out of it, I think.
What's really interesting, when I read the article and hearing you talk now, I started thinking about you performing on stage. Because you have such a deep academic understanding of the music and the vocalizations and stuff like that. How do you balance that with some sort of sense of spontaneity and sort of soul in your song without continually catching yourself, well, it should be this way, that way, this way?
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because another colleague of mine, Joe Raposo, with whom I have written a number of songs, has written a beautiful book called Jazz Improvisation, The Whole Brain Approach. And his approach to jazz improvisation is to strengthen for a student, strengthen their left brain, logical, analytical knowledge of a song, and then put that away and strengthen the right side of the brain's creative side, the expressive side, the spatial learner side, the side that interacts in the moment with the other people in the room on the stage, the side that interacts with the audience, and the side that improvises, that doesn't necessarily know what's coming next, but can refer back to that left brain. And I know this is oversimplified. We really don't have a left and a right brain, you know, with a line in between. But for purposes
of this, we actually do.
Yes.
There's the corpus callosum there.
But they do sort of cross.
Yeah, they cross. But
a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not all isolated to one side or the other. But this book really helped to open my eyes about teaching and about performing in the moment. And I can be very creative and think back to the theory that I need to know and the scale degree that I'm searching for on a particular chord. But it also allows me to be stretching in that right brain capacity at the same time.
So you're very mindful while you're performing?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so.
We're almost out of time, and I just want to mention one more thing, one of many. You do a podcast called The Singer's Muse?
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Okay, that's a pretty new project for me. I'm still learning.
We actually only have 1 minute, but this is really tailored for singers.
Yes, it's a singer's journey and what inspires us. In our the second episode, the most recent episode, was about the Bach and Jazz concert. So I think it's well worth it if you want to see that presentation once it comes out in a month or two.
Tish, give out your web address again.
Tishoney.com, T-I-S-H-O-N-E-Y.
My returning guest tonight, and it's always a revelation talking to her, Dr. Tish Oney, international performing artist, author, composer, conductor. She tours as symphony, pops, big band soloist, jazz vocalist, voice pedagogue, musicologist, and she makes a mean hot dog. Her new album is titled The Best Part. And again, look for this Bach and Jazz with Tish Oney concert, because that's going to be fascinating. And I hope it's the beginning of a series. Tish, it's been amazing as always.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy to talk to you, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.
I've got a brand new baby. He's got a lot.